Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's Ecologic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today we'll be talking about ethical food choices and how that all fits in with the path to sustainable living. I'm joined by Matt Halteman, Professor Matt Halteman, a professor at Calvin College in the philosophy department. He's an author, he's a teacher, he's an advocate. He's recently written a book called Hungry, Beautiful Animals, The Joyful Case for Going Vegan. Really excited to have Matt on the podcast today. Matt, greetings. How are you today?
I'm great, Ted. It's so good to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
I'm delighted to meet you and to hear all about your profession. Before we get started, where are you sitting today?
So I am sitting today in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We call it the Mitten State, and I'm over here on the West Coast. So we put up our hands in Michigan, the Mitten State, to tell you where we're from.
And did you grow up in Michigan?
I did not, but I did grow up in the Midwest. I actually grew up in a suburb of Chicago called Wheaton, Illinois. And very, very Midwestern boy. I was actually born out east, but my parents relocated to the Midwest, and I've been here ever since. So grew up outside Chicago, went to school near Chicago, went to grad school in Indiana, and now have been teaching in Michigan. So yeah, I'm right here in the Midwest.
Gotcha. So the Wheaton College that you went to is in Illinois, is that
correct?
Right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And my daughter went to a Wheaton that's in Massachusetts. They're always getting confused. But now you somehow you've really focused your career on ethical food choices. Right. And how did that come about in your life? How did you get so focused on food?
That's such a good question. And it's, you know, it was not a straightforward path. The short version is, you know, I got interested in philosophy as a college student. I'd been a high school athlete, probably the most likely person to have short rib bone fangs at my own wedding. Not a vegan, nothing close to a vegan.
Yeah.
And I got into philosophy in college. And what philosophy taught me was, wow, there's a lot of really fascinating stuff going on inside of us, outside of us, and it's really complicated. And it took me a while to get to food. My main area of interest is 19th and 20th century French and German philosophy. So that's why people run roaches from a tactical flashlight when I enter a room, because nobody wants to talk about phenomenology. But one of the main emphases there is that philosophy should serve what happens on the ground, right? Lived experience played a really important role in that tradition. And so when I finally realized that, holy smokes, food is this topic that we hardly ever talk about. It's super hard to reflect on it, right? Because our food ways are our life ways. Nobody wants to stand back from the things where we get our comfort and our security and our belonging with our people. So it's nearly impossible to reflect about it. And it's so close to us, it's like breathing air or speaking your native language. It's just so close, we don't even see it. So when I realized, holy smokes, if you want to talk about living the good life on the ground, if you want to talk about the lived pursuit of wisdom in our everyday experience, and you haven't gotten reflective about what you're putting on your plate, you're missing this incredible opportunity for intentional living. Because, of course, our food choices connect us most radically, both figuratively and practically, to every other link in the great chain.
So this sounds like at age 24 or 25, you had this epiphany.
Yes, that's exactly it.
And you, the athlete, probably eating steaks and the whole bit, right? Oh. You know, you said, no, this has got to change. So did you make a radical transformation diet-wise?
So, I mean, it depends on what you mean by radical. My partner, my wife, Susan, is the moral spine of this relationship. And a fellow philosopher dared me to teach a course on this stuff. And she said, well, look, let's err on the side of being too conservative, right? If you're going to teach this class, you might find out that you really want to eat differently. So for the duration of this course, you know, I like a challenge in the kitchen. Let's go vegan for 3 weeks while you're teaching this course. And then if it turns out that, you know, you find some good arguments for eating the way we did before, then we'll go back to it. but at least for the 3 weeks you're teaching this course, you know, we'll try something new. And Ted, we never went back. That was over 20 years ago at this point. And I think it's, you know, one of the most beautiful decisions I ever made, but I certainly didn't see it that way at the
time. How incredible. Okay. So what's your favorite entree right now? I mean, I happen to love tempeh.
I
love tofu enough that I even named my cat tofu.
Oh my gosh.
But what's your favorite entree? Whet my appetite here a little bit.
Ted, we are fellow tofu lovers. In fact, I drive across the state of Michigan once a month to buy 25 China Rose Nigari tofus that are only available on the east side of the state. I'm on first name basis with the proprietors of this business. Tofu has built both of our children. We eat a lot of this stuff. You know, usually I don't like to try to live into vegan stereotypes, you know, but this is the one that I've been assiduously committed to. I think my favorite way to do tofu, we call it hippie style tofu, another vegan stereotype, but we take nutritional yeast and salt and pepper and tamari. We cut the tofu into triangles. We dip it in the tamari, and then we put it in breadcrumbs, nutritional yeast, salt, and pepper, and then we fry it with a nice, I don't know, peanut oil, olive oil, you name it. Mm-hmm. With some sriracha or some barbecue sauce, I'll tell you what.
Okay, fantastic. And it sounds, I think you slid this in there, but you raised your kids as vegans also.
Yeah, I mean, we've always taken an incremental and non-perfectionistic approach. I mean, to parenting generally, but especially to, you know, the way we treat these decisions with our kids. And so, yes, that's been the aspiration. But are they going to eat a cupcake with dairy added at a party, or are they going to have a Milky Way on Halloween? Absolutely. We've never been absolutist about this, in part because, you know, we want them to see this as something joyful and beautiful and something they can live toward as adults without, you know, compromising on the beautiful things in life. And so, yes, we raise them vegan, but they are not sort of strident, militant, and we are not perfectionistic about it, because we want it to be something that they'll enjoy aspiring to rather than something that feels like a fundamentalism.
Right. That thou shalt. That thou shalt.
Exactly.
You know, I raised with my ex, we raised our children macrobiotically. And And then the neighbor had a pig roast, and the whole neighborhood joined for the pig roast, and the kids were running all around. It was, you know, good old days. And the kids were just, Daddy, and they were handfuls of this roasted pig.
Oh my
pork.
Gosh.
We love pig. We love pig. Why don't you feed us pig? Anyway, they it widened their diet a little bit.
I was going to say that's the perfect choice of anecdote, because chapter 2 of my book, Hungry Beautiful Animals, is actually set at a pig roast, because this was one of my all-time favorite foods. And so I feel your children's pain, let me tell you.
Well, let's talk about the book. Hungry Beautiful Animals. That's us, I guess. We're the hungry, beautiful animals?
Well, us and everyone else, right? I mean, one of the things that I'm really committed to in this book is to, you know, helping us see how much we all have in common as creatures with an interest in flourishing. And so what Hungry, Beautiful Animals means in a nutshell is that we're all hungry. That is, we have desires that push us out into the world looking for things to complete us. We're all animals, that is, we have limitations and physical bodies, we're organisms, and our beauty hangs in the balance between those desires that push us forward and those animal limits that push back, and we have to negotiate that balance very, very wisely. To flourish, right, to live beautiful lives, we've got to bring those desires into concert with those animal limits. And so Hungry Beautiful Animals is an invitation to see how, if human hungry beautiful animals learn to strike that balance with a little more aplomb, that all hungry beautiful animals will benefit from that.
So it makes sense to me. What are the benefits then of a vegan diet?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I love about, you know, going vegan is that you tell me what you're interested in and I can tell you what's beautiful, right? So if you're somebody who is interested in personal health, we can talk about reducing inflammation. We can talk about protection from so-called diseases of affluence. If you're interested in public health, we can talk about lessening pandemic risk. We can talk about less stress on an overtaxed healthcare system. If you're interested in climate, right? And I know that's where you've focused the last 40 years of your career, environment, climate, sustainability. Well, then we can talk about, as you say, right, and your climatarians and the quest for climate-friendly food, right? Food is a big deal, right? Half of the habitable land on planet Earth is used to grow it, generates 25% of the emissions that are causing all this trouble. So if the environment and climate issues float your boat, we can dig in there. If you're someone who's concerned about worker justice, right? The jobs that bring animal foods to the table are among the most difficult jobs for people who are already disenfranchised, right? So whether you're looking at personal health, public health, worker justice, climate issues, all of that, right, is served by going vegan. And we haven't even talked about, right, animal cruelty or the flourishing of other creatures. So I love this because I see going vegan, as I say in the book, it's a joy aggregator, right? When you want to see beautiful things happen in any of those sectors, personal health, public health, the environment, the climate, you know, flourishing of other creatures, going vegan allows you to bring all those different beautiful transformations together in one thing that's low-hanging fruit, right? That everyone can do as long as we take an incremental approach, right?
So it can still be very very tasty, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I think a lot of people have a perception. I guess that the vegan diet or the macrobiotic diet is generally not as tasty, not as, you know, I mean, we all know what a good steak dinner is like, or a really Absolutely. Beautiful, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but you, I guess the more you work with it, the more you can find that fulfillment in different combinations of spices and flavors.
I think that's right. But I also think, right, there is no one vegan diet, right? Like you can have Diet Coke and Lay's potato chips, and that's vegan. Or you can get into Indian cuisine, Thai cuisine, Ethiopian cuisine, where there are a lot of sort of accidentally vegan ways to do these things. And so rather than seeing a so-called vegan diet as a monolith, I like to think about, right, how much our possibilities for cuisine expand, right, when we think outside the frankly very limiting box of, like, you know, a hockey puck of animal protein, some overcooked vegetable, and then an oversalted potato, right? I mean, I know people are very nostalgic for this, but from a culinary perspective, it's very, very boring, right? There are only so many salty sauces that you can dress up poorly cooked vegetables, a side of salty potatoes, and an animal protein with. But once you are open to, right, the plethora of plant-based options and the ways we have at our disposal to cook them beautifully, for me, it's been a massive expansion. I mean, I eat many more beautiful foods now than I ever ate as an omnivore. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I love the taste of meat. My wife is in the sector, the alt protein industry, you know, trying to bring products into the into the world that look and taste and smell and cost, right, you know, the way that the traditional animal products do. And I'm anxiously awaiting, right, some of those products. So it's not that I don't love traditional approaches to meeting our protein needs. It's just that it comes packaged with all this stuff that makes us both individually and collectively sad. And I like joy. I want to live a life full of joy. And so,
and I think I did cut you off a few minutes ago when you were starting to talk about just taking an incremental approach. And I think, as I've read a little bit about you in preparing, you were just talking about make being a vegan an aspiration, something that you're on a path toward, but you don't beat yourself up for, I don't know, falling off the wagon using an alcohol term, but you know, you don't have to be an absolute, you don't have to be absolute in your diet in order to be on that path that unlocks all those benefits that you're talking about.
Absolutely, Ted. And actually, this is where I think our interests really sort of gear into one another, because the sustainability conversation is one that you simply can't have except through a systems lens, right? I mean, to talk about sustainability, you've got to talk about ecological, economic, and social systems at a minimum, which means that complexity is guaranteed, diversity is guaranteed, conflict of interest is guaranteed. There's no way to talk about sustainability without seeing that there's a need to balance here. And what that means, and this is key to my approach, is that perfectionism is off the table before the conversation even starts. And here's where I'm stealing a term from you. The power of the increment is where everything happens in going vegan, because our inner systems are a lot like the outer systems, right? We are not a single soul, transparent self. We have intellectual parts, we have emotional parts, we have social parts, we have physical parts, we have moral parts. And what we all know from experience is those parts are often very much out of whack, right? I mean, our heart wants to nuzzle a cow, our gut wants a burger, our head is like bobbling back and forth between defending our old habits and trying to get up the gumption and self-respect to try some new ones. And so if we're taking an inner systems approach, this has to be about incremental change. It has to be about sizing up what are our gifts, what are our talents, what are the things we don't see so clearly. How do we go vegan, that is, move in the general direction of this beautiful aspirational vision without self-flagellating that we can't be perfect? And what I love about you know, the approach I'm writing about in Hungry Beautiful Animals, perfection is off the table before the conversation even starts, because you cannot deal with an inner system as complicated as the human being with anything other than an incremental approach. Perfectionism is not possible for systems as complex as ours. And if you start with that understanding, going vegan can be a liberating incremental move toward an aspiration with ebbs and flows and a focus on particular talents and gifts, rather than some debilitating, restrictive perfectionism.
Yeah, well put. Now, I'm going to throw you a softball question here. Should everybody go vegan?
I think it depends on what you mean by that, right? So I don't, if what you mean by that is, should every person never eat another animal product ever again, ever? Then no, of course not, right? Of course not.
Told you it was a softball question. Yeah,
there's lots and lots of reasons that lots and lots of people are going to have to continue to eat, right, in the ways that have become traditional over the last, you know.
Like the Eskimos are eating fish up in the Arctic, right?
Right. And a lot of places in the world where protein is limited, where we don't have other choices. I am not interested in going into places I don't understand, I've never lived, right, and waving a shame banner in anyone's face. In fact, I'm not, throughout the book, I'm not even really talking about moral obligation at all. Now, I happen to think there are really interesting arguments to be made, but a lot of other philosophers have already made those. I'm making an aesthetic argument. What I'm saying is, when you consult your inner system and you say to your inner system, what are my deepest desires? Who do I really want to be? What would my life look like if I'm incrementally moved in the direction of truth, beauty, and goodness? And what I'm saying is, we're already drawn to the aspirational ideal of going vegan. I don't need to make any arguments at all. All I need to do is ask you to take an honest look at your inner system and what your inner system really wants, right? Your intellect wants to take the facts seriously, wants to live in view of the truth rather than in a fool's paradise. Your emotional system wants to be coherent in the way that it feels, right? Yeah. It doesn't want to be loving dogs and eating pigs. Your social parts they want to be living toward a world where no worker has to repeatedly ignore cries of mercy to do terrible things to living creatures that then they have to live with and process, right, for the rest of their lives. Nobody wants this system. The problem is, as a culture and as individuals, we've lacked the imagination to see that this is what we really want. And so I prefer
to break out and to be able to break out of that system. I mean, you get all that entrenched infrastructure. And I think I liked one of the things that I read again during the prep that, you know, you're lecturing to all these college students, and a lot of them are on meal plans at college. They're staying in the dorms, they're on meal plans. They get 21 meals a week. That's that. And it's not, I mean, there's things you can eat that are vegan, certainly, but the meal plan, say, is primarily more traditional cuisine. But as I get it, what you're talking about is preparing for them when they have their own kitchens. When they've grown up, they have their own kitchens. They have their own autonomy as to what they're ingesting, and then they can start making those decisions.
That's absolutely right. And I see that what I call the preparation of their inner soil. Right, when they're in college, they've got this incredible opportunity intellectually to become more open-minded. They've got this incredible opportunity to undergo what I call, following the American pragmatist Richard Rorty, emotional education, right? Becoming more empathetic about people who are different from you and standing in other people's shoes. I mean, for college students locked into a 21 meal plan, I think, you know, obsessing about the food is a red herring. You can go vegan by reading a book a month, by doing an internal assessment of your talents and gifts and figuring out, well, how can I live toward this aspiration now, even if my diet doesn't change until I have food autonomy, until I set up my new household. But what that can do, right, Ted, what preparing that inner soil does is when it comes to making that next round of decisions, you're thinking differently, right? Your intellect and your emotion are saying to your social self, hey, when we move off campus next year, when we move into a house with other roommates, what would it be like if we looked for roommates who were cooking a little differently or willing to move with us in this direction? That's the power of the increment, right? You do that inner work, and then on the margins, you find places where you can move in that direction, even if your diet doesn't change a lot at all, at least in the short term. I do think that diet is a powerful, right, pragmatic aggregator, right? When you're looking, if you only have 2 minutes to talk and the question is, do we want to talk about animals used in, you know, research labs, or do we want to talk about animals used for food? I'm always going to go to food, because that's where, right, the practical efficacy lies. But there are all sorts of other aspects, right, to living into this aspiration. And sometimes the food is going to come online later once you've got your financial circumstances figured out, or once you've got your mental health figured out, or once you've got your eating disorder figured out, right? The last thing I'm going to say to someone who struggles with body image and is already eating a restricted diet is, oh, shame on you. It should be even more restricted. To me, that's not even consistent with the idea of going vegan, because it's not compassionate or wise.
Oh, interesting. You mentioned your wife, Susan, I think it was, or is, that she's in the food business. And I wanted to ask you about sort of the Beyond Burgers and the Impossible Burgers and all. You know, do you think that's helpful or in terms of sort of tricking people into eating plant-based foods that simulate meat?
Yeah, well, so the first thing I'll say, Ted, is I always keep a wall between what my wife does for a living and what I do for a living. We're kind of working in different sectors of the movement and really
be careful.
Challenging
we'll be
each
careful
other.
Here.
So, yeah, I'm not, I certainly will not and cannot speak for her. But, of course, I have my own opinions. And I guess my view is one of the key ideas in my book is that, and actually this is an idea that I take from the wonderful Detroit-based activist and writer Adrienne Marie Brown. And one of the things she says in this absolutely incredible book called Emergent Strategy, I think anyone who wants to change the world should read this book, Emergent Strategy. It is just a beauty. And one of the things that Adrienne Marie Brown says in Emergent Strategy is transformation is a messy business. And until we're ready to acknowledge that many, many feet are going to be walking many, many paths, with the hope of reaching, right, the world that we want to live in, yeah. we're never going to be making a go of this. And so my view is I'm excited that yeah. the alt protein industry is mm-hmm. there for the purpose of helping to make ethical decisions easier for people who aren't predisposed to think twice about what they're eating. I think that's very helpful. These groups are not making this food for vegans. They're making this food for omnivores who want to continue to enjoy, right, the products that they love, but they're doing it, right, with a much less environmental impact, with hopefully a much less cruelty, right, in the system. Now, is that my talent and gift set? Right. No. In fact, you know, I'm a philosopher, so I'm in the business, right, not of creating cell lines, right, that can be used to either mimic or actually be in some cases. Right. I mean, there's different angles yeah. in the alt protein world. Some of them are actually cultures that are grown. It's actual meat. Right. But without ever an animal dying for it. Sometimes it's plant-based, right, where they learn yeah. to mimic animal protein. Sometimes it's fungus. It's mycoproteins, right? Yeah. I'm glad those exist because I think there's a lot of people who will benefit. And from a sustainability perspective, I think, you know, we're still at the beginning stages. We don't know what scaling this will look like. But, you know, for what I've read, there is great opportunity here, as it were, to have our steak and our earth too, right? To yeah. to be able
and they,
to
you know, I think love. They I think they taste great. I really like the way you frame that up. They're not making those for me. I don't need to simulate meat. But you know, down at the you know watching the hockey game here in downtown LA, you know,
right.
they're on the menu. You know, yes. there's this option, like you said, and they're pretty darn good.
They are. And I think, too, that's one more plug for the power of the increment, right? Because if you're somebody who tries a Beyond Burger or who tries, I don't know if you've ever had, Ted, the Juicy Marbles product, but it's basically like it's the closest thing I've ever had to like genuine brisket. It's insane. I mean, it's almost
really.
There are people in my family for whom it's too much like meat. They actually don't yeah. love it because they've
really.
Moved away from that aesthetic and it's too close. But I mean, in my experience, people try these things and they think, you know what? All of a sudden, a capacious part of their imagination that has never been opened before, there's a crack of light, right? They're like, huh, you know, maybe this food future wouldn't be so bad. And then, you know what? Next time we're talking about animals, instead of having this like deep cognitive dissonance that raises the defensive strategies, right? Because nobody wants to think about losing their favorite foods.
Yeah.
They're more open philosophically to thinking about how this affects other creatures because they can imagine a world where they don't have to give up brisket, right? In order to do that. And we don't think usually from a systems perspective about those two unrelated experiences, but inside they're very intimately related because until you can imagine a world where you can have the same aesthetic experience of that steak dinner with your grandparents that you had every year growing up, right? The
tradition,
minute
yeah.
a vegan world includes that possibility, you're going to be much more socially open, much more emotionally open, much more intellectually open to arguments that would otherwise have gotten your gut defenses, right? That that cognitive barriers that go up, what the social science, what do they call it? The identity protective cognition, right? Where no matter how many facts go on, you get farther and farther entrenched. It, because your brain has said, nope, right? I have to give up comfort. I have to give up approval. I have to give up belonging. I'm not willing to go there. So the yeah. more facts you go, the deeper I go into, you know, my set beliefs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, great conversation. How do you keep balance in your life, Professor?
Oh, wow. Now, I love that you're ending with a philosophy question, although well, the risk is won't be able to keep it brief.
some people say, you know, I listen to music or whatever, you know, whatever yeah. it is. What keeps you?
So balance for me, and this is a little bit of a wonky answer, but it's at the heart of the book. Balance for me is about learning to love how complex my inner life is and about learning to see things that used to create a lot of friction and anxiety and even despair, right, about quote unquote inconsistency or tension in my beliefs. The more I've come to realize that there's an inner family in there that's a whole of many parts, and that conflict among my intellectual and social and emotional and physical and moral parts is not only expectable, but absolutely crucial to my flourishing, right? In the same way out there in the world, if there isn't friction, if there aren't conflicts of interest, we never get that impetus that creates that power of the increment that goads us on, right, in the direction we need to go. So for me, keeping it balanced is about learning, instead of dreading the complexity of my inner life, I've learned to love it. I've learned even to stand back in awe of it and to always say, when those defensive forces are rising within me, where's the opportunity here for delight? Why is this tension within me? What is it inviting me to see in a new way? And I find deep joy now in things that used to cause, right,
tormented you.
Exactly. Oh, and that makes me feel like, a superhero, right? It's alchemy, right? Straw into gold.
Changing your cognitive set. Hey, listen, I think your students are very lucky to have you as their professor. And it's been a great conversation. Where do people get your book?
Yeah, great. Well, it's on sale, thanks to my wonderful publisher, Basic Books. Everywhere books are sold. So your favorite stores, if you're a Amazon, if you're a digital shopper, Hachette, which is the Basic is an imprint of Hachette, you can go there. The easiest way to find out what's going on in the book is to go to hungrybeautifulanimals.com. So luckily it's an odd enough title that we were able to get the .com. So can find us there. I hope if you check it out that you love it, and I'd love to hear from you if you do.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too, Ted. Thank you.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.